The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Josepha Madigan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jonathan.
I'm not going to talk about the European Super League. You can rest easy there. I won't be asking your opinions on it. But we are going to talk about a piece that you wrote in the newspapers earlier in the week about divorce. Now, people will know you're a government TD, you're a minister, but more importantly, you're a solicitor practicing in the area of family law. Has there been a big jump in the last couple of months in people looking for divorce or people coming to you in real marital trouble because of the nature of how relationships evolved during the pandemic?
Yeah, I think it became quite clear to me after a number of months, particularly during lockdown, from my conversations with family lawyers that I obviously are my colleagues for over 20 years, with constituents and indeed with friends. What prompted me really to write the article is really to let people know that they're not alone, that there is help out there and there are supports. And I know from my experience of dealing with clients going through separation or divorce that it can be extremely lonely journey, especially though during a pandemic when the scaffolding, I suppose, of the normal support structures are gone. There are less distractions, there's less busyness to a certain extent, so people find themselves in this situation. I remember, Jonathan, talking to you many, many years ago during the recession, and we were talking about couples going from soulmates to cellmates. Little did we know how prescient that would be into the future. I know anecdotally from talking to family lawyers that there is a slight increase, and I'm hoping that I'm wrong about that. I know when we look at the consensus, there's been about 283,000 people who would consider themselves separated or divorced, and that was in the 2016 census. And I remember when I was at Cabinet, one of the first things I brought up when the pandemic and this COVID trauma hit us was around domestic violence and around addiction. And that they're inherently sometimes involved when you're talking about marital breakdown. And I remember it so well during the recession, and I see it now very clearly. So one of the things that struck me about this from talking to family lawyers and indeed, as I said, constituents, is around the delays in the facilitation of cases. And there is a backlog there. There were months where cases weren't heard. They're trying to roll that out now. And there's a lot of cases that would have been listed in January and February that are now only being called over for May or June. So that's going to delay things. The longer there is a delay for couples, the less closure that there is for them. The county registrars at the moment aren't sitting. And I know that the courts aren't yet working at full capacity. I think the court services themselves have done their best in difficult circumstances. But there's definitely, I suppose, a slower pace of work, if you like. And I know the Dublin Circuit family has held callovers for the last 2 weeks, you know, to reschedule motions that weren't heard during the lockdown. So I hope that they can catch up sooner rather than later.
Okay.
But I just wanted to assure your listeners that, you know, if they are finding themselves in a situation other than dramatic situations where there's domestic violence issues or child protection issues, and there's always obviously supports there for those circumstances, there are supports like, you know, counselling. There's 24-hour helplines. There are mediation services there. A lot of them,
Josepha Madigan, would be traditionally face-to-face. I know it's a Hollywood stereotype that you get the couple who are after falling out with each other into a room and basically they shout at each other through a medium, i.e. a counsellor, in the hope that they might be able to solve some of those problems. That doesn't quite work on Zoom, does it?
It is much more difficult. But, you know, even again, going back to the recession, similar circumstances now, in fact, perhaps more so, where the home can become a pressure cooker. So with no valve other than, you know, the slow disintegration or the fast disintegration of the marriage. And because of that, mediation services are used online. And I know it's not the same thing, but often mediators can set out rules for living within the home and for sitting certain structures and certain ways of maybe dealing with the children or even dealing with themselves. It's It's been very, very difficult, I think, for everyone during this pandemic. But I think for some couples, you know, it's been the straw that's broken the camel's back when you're talking about living 24/7 at home with very little outlet other than, you know, going for a walk in the park. As one client said to me, and I or not client, one colleague said to me, you know, there's only so much, you know, Zoom and so much housework and so much baking that you can do. But often couples find themselves just looking at each other and wondering what's happened to their marriage. So it's important that they know that they can do something about it.
Did lockdown expose a lot of unhealthy relationships? You know, people are very good at papering over the cracks or are ignoring some behaviours that, that they would normally get to or they had been putting off dealing with it, that when you were effectively trapped at home, as we all were, but not everybody would have found themselves in a difficult situation like that. But did the lockdown show a mirror up to many relationships that had probably already started to break down?
Yes, I think so. And I think for some people it was a good thing. I think that they found that they actually liked each other more than they thought they did, that, you know, they got on well. But unfortunately for some people who had used the busyness of life, if you like, as a distraction, or, you know, the fact that they had work, whereas most people now are working at home, they were working outside the home, they were commuting, they were bringing their children to and from school, all those sorts of things. And then that's just disappeared and they're looking at each other for the first time perhaps ever. And for those couples, it's been very, very sad for them, apart from traumatic, because they didn't expect that to happen. And I know from talking to my former colleagues, a lot of them who are in the Family Law Society committee, you know, they said it's just really, really difficult for them, you know. And like the Legal Aid Board provides a lot of service as well. And I would always say to people to get counselling as well, individual counselling, and then work towards mediation. But the dedicated family court is something that the Family Court Bill will provide for, and at least that's now in the programme for government. And I think that'll provide, you know, a less adversarial structure for people, and a new family law court building as well in Dublin, which will be really, really beneficial.
I want to talk about politics in a minute, but before we move off this topic, you said in the piece that how you approach a divorce determines how the divorce ends up. And again, that will differ from people to people. But what did you mean by that?
Well, first of all, it's easier said than done. I mean, I'm in a situation where I'm married 20 years. I haven't been in that situation. And I think we can all have an ideal, but having an ideal and actually rolling it out in practical terms is difficult when you're talking about custody and access and maintenance and lump sums and family homes and pensions and succession rights and all of those tricky issues. So I suppose what I mean is that you can go in all guns blazing and start engaging an adversarial solicitor to issue letters, to issue proceedings without perhaps thinking things through. And that's where I think mediation is very beneficial. But obviously it's not going to suit everybody. It shouldn't be used for mischievous circumstances either, or to delay matters. And obviously, as I said earlier, if there are child protection issues, there's the Child Care Act there, whether emergency care orders can be given, or Gardaí, even under Section 12, can remove a child if needs be. And obviously the domestic violence protections are available as well, safety orders, interim barring orders and protection orders, and they're still full ongoing in the district court at this moment in time. But so it's really, I suppose, about being adult, and when you've children involved as well, they can be caught in the crossfire, so it's obviously in their interest and your interest, because a lot of people are going to be co-parenting for the rest of their lives. So how they start will be how they finish. Now, I know Shakespeare said, Jonathan, what we'll do first is kill all the lawyers. And, you know, people often say that. But, you know, so you don't
always
necessarily...
Not all lawyers end up in court. Some of them are actually very good mediators as well. So let's say that there's more than one route out.
Absolutely, yeah. No, absolutely.
Look, I want to talk about matters political while we have you, because obviously while you are a solicitor with an expertise in family law, you are also a government minister, so we can't let you go without asking some questions. Mary Lou MacDonald was on this programme earlier on, and Fine Gael, amongst others, have been asking questions about their voter database. She told us that it's stored in Frankfurt, Germany. It had been moved from London after the advent of Brexit, and she said there's nothing untoward and nothing strange. Do you accept that?
Well, first of all, one would ask the question, why did people give their consent? Did people give the consent for the data to be stored in Frankfurt or London? Where was it stored beforehand?
Electoral database data, we were told.
No, that's not correct. I mean, why did it take Deputy MacDonald so long to answer a simple question? I mean, the answer had to be dragged out of her. She finally admitted to you, after over a week of Sinn Féin avoiding questions on it, that Sinn Féin is storing the names, home addresses and perceived voting intentions of 3.5 million Irish people in Frankfurt in Germany. So
she admitted writing the perceived voting intentions. She said everything that was stored was on the electoral database and some of the information that
nobody's given their consent to have their data stored in Frankfurt or London. You know, is the Sinn Féin database subject to Irish or German data protection laws? Is Sinn Féin registered as the data controller in both countries? She says it's just the electoral register, but there are registers for each local authority. There's no single national register. And so why were people from outside the state managing party political accounts during a democratic election? And how much was spent on the work that the Serbian and German Facebook managers were involved in? Like, what work did they do? You know, was it spent declared in Sinn Féin?
Why is their nationality important? Why is their nationality important? Mary Lou MacDonald says they're Europeans.
No, but like, you know, Fine Gael doesn't have such a centralised database. Our party leaders made clear that canvassing someone on their doorstep as a TD, a councillor or an election candidate is not consent to then go and give that information to a centralised database. Like, why was it necessary that Deputy Mary Lou MacDonald has a Facebook account which is also managed in Germany? And why is the page of the party's Northern leader, Deputy First Minister Michelle O'Neill, overseen by someone in Serbia? Like, why was Michelle O'Neill's Serbia-based page mysteriously taken down from the Facebook ad library in mid-April after the party's links to Serbia and Germany
What evidence do you have that Facebook pages were being managed from anywhere other than the politicians' own private phones? I mean, that's a serious allegation which I have to ask you to validate.
So effectively, what they're saying is that people haven't given their consent for the data that is being stored by Sinn Féin in Frankfurt or London.
Okay, so you mentioned their Facebook pages, which I have to pick you up on. So where have you any evidence of that?
So effectively, we know that they took down their Facebook ads. People need to have confidence about where the data is stored and managed.
Ads are not their pages. I just have to clarify that. That's important. That, you know, we are not suggesting that either politician isn't controlling
their own
content.
Serbia-based page was mysteriously taken down from the Facebook ad library in mid-April. After the party's
That's ads. Look, is this storm in a teacup? That's what Mary Lou MacDonald is saying.
I think when we look at Cambridge Analytica before and we look at the Brexit referendum, we have to be very careful as a state and as a country how we manage our data. There are important questions for Sinn Féin to answer. I mean, they really need to answer this. And, you know, if they can give us legitimate answers to these questions. It took her so long today to answer a simple question as to where the data was stored. And finally, she admitted that it was Frankfurt. Why couldn't she have admitted that a few weeks ago? Mm. So something to hide here, and we need to investigate and interrogate properly.
Is it going to be raised in the Dáil? Do you want Mary Lou MacDonald to come into the Dáil? Does she need to go before an Oireachtas committee? I mean, how do you propose doing that? She's answered the questions today.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook pages are public information. I mean, this is public information at the end of the day. And if there isn't consent given by people for their personal data to be kept on databases outside of Ireland, then I think that needs to be looked at.
Does Fine Gael have a database?
We don't have a centralised database, no.
Okay, is information stored locally that would still be subject to the same GDPR as Sinn Féin's data, wherever it is stored?
Yeah, so effectively, we don't have a centralised database, but we have obviously localised database, but they would only be shared within the Fine Gael constituency itself. There's nothing shared other than that.
So who do I go to
then? It's a very different
situation. Same question that I asked Mary Lou MacDonald. If I'm concerned about what data is being stored about me by Fine Gael, who do I go to find out?
Well, there is, you know, an electoral register, obviously. So everybody's on the electoral register.
I can search that, but if I'm interested, we only keep Fine Gael members.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the only information we have.
You don't keep information on voters on a database, as in number 14.
No, we don't. He's always voted Fine Gael. We'll knock on his door. We're not going to vote in number 12. No, we don't.
Okay.
No, unless I was canvassing in my own constituency and I had my own sheet which tells me who lives in a certain house, and I might write down, you know, that person doesn't want to vote for me, or it does want to vote for me. You know, but it's not shared with anybody. So that's just for my own information as a public representative, you know.
Last question I have for you. We're going to talk about travel restrictions next. There seems to be a bit of a disconnect between some of the parties on when people can travel or not. Fine Gael seem to be pushing quite strongly for August. Do you believe we can go on foreign holidays in August?
Well, look, I mean, at the moment, I heard Simon Coveney and the Taoiseach have said it regularly that, you know, nobody should be booking a flight at this point in time. If they do, I would suggest they get make sure it's refundable, because nothing has been decided as yet. You know, the EU cert, digital cert, is being looked at. It is hoped that it will be up and running by the summer, but we cannot guarantee that.
Would you be confident booking a holiday in August?
No, I'm not going to book anything personally myself. But, you know, I, as I said, I think if somebody does book it and decides to take that risk, I think they should make sure that it's refundable just in case. But, you know, it is good and positive, I think, the fact that the Taoiseach just said yesterday that we hope to have that target of 82% of adults vaccinated by the end of June. That augurs well. NIAC are meeting today around the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So, you know, all of those things point to a bit of positivity over the next number of months. But obviously, we still don't, I still wouldn't recommend people booking foreign holidays at this point in time.
Josepha Madigan, Minister with responsibility for Special Education, Fine Gael TD and Lawyer. Thank you very much for joining us.